Today, we'll choose an EV for a Florida man hoping to move on from his Honda Clarity plug-in hybrid, help a Tesla Model 3 performance owner decide if they should upgrade to the new one, and suggest an EV for an awesome sommelier with a family. Welcome to Battery Bargains, a series from the Batteries Included podcast. This is episode number 29. I'm Dominic Ioni, and I'm joined today by Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge, along with special guest Brandon Flash. He is a professional in the DC fast charging industry. He is also a creator and runs the Brandon Flash YouTube channel, where he posts videos reviewing EVs that he's owned, rented, or borrowed, along with lots of road trip and fast charging fun. So welcome, Brandon. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Anything you'd like me to change or add to that intro?
No, that's good. I think awesome. That sums it up.
All right. So if you're looking for your own battery bargain, send us like a one-minute video or a short email with a couple short paragraphs describing your use case and budget, and we'll see about featuring your case on an upcoming episode. All right, so to kick this, let's kick this off with our first case for today. And to be transparent, we've paraphrased these emails a bit for length and clarity. So are you guys ready to go car shopping?
Always.
Let's do it.
All right. So our first one comes to us from, let me see, Morgan, his actual name. And he says, "Hello, I would like to know if there are any EVs out there that might be cheaper for me on a monthly basis. Currently driving a 2021 Honda Clarity plug-in hybrid. I love the Clarity's comfort, space, and relaxed driving style. It also has enough room for a rear-facing child seat and a couple passengers, which I need occasionally. I drive about 1,200 miles a month, and my transportation costs are around $600 a month all in. That includes gas, electricity, insurance, and my loan payment. I don't have a home charger. I charge at home every night on a normal outlet using the cable that came with the car. My commute varies, but the longest day trip I have to do, usually twice a month, is a 300-mile loop between three work locations. There are no chargers at any of my work locations and also none on the direct routes between workplaces or my house. There are limited charging options a bit out of the way, and I know from experience with my Clarity that they are usually packed full and not the most reliable. Is there anything cheaper out there for me, or should I wait for something to come along in the future? Signed, Fev, Florida Man." All right. So this is an interesting case. Brandon, what do you think?
So I just did some quick math on this use case. It's arguably potentially the perfect use case for a plug-in hybrid, actually, because if you take their use case, 1,200 miles per month, which is actually not that many, and then you subtract the two 300-mile loops, so that leaves you 28 days left, and you divide that 600 by 28, they're doing about 20 miles a day outside of those 300 miles, which is pretty much perfect for a plug-in hybrid to do it on all electric, but then have the 300-mile days that they're doing on gas.
Right.
And I'm a little skeptical of completely no charging, especially in Florida. Florida has a pretty robust charging network, actually. I can't really think of anything better unless they could use a different car for those 300-mile days and then have maybe a Model 3 as their other car, because a Model 3 is extremely cheap to lease these days and their mileage use case works for a lease.
Right. That's some good math there. Hey, Tom, is Brandon's mic working okay for you?
It started working better in the beginning. It was fluttering, but it sounded a little bit better towards the end. We'll monitor that and see if there's anything we could do.
So you figure, besides the 300 mile trips, he's not burning any gas, really. He's just using, because the Honda Clarity gets what, 40 to 50 miles of all electric range, basically.
I think 30 to 40, if I remember.
I used to moderate the forum, and that was like our anchor group of owners was like Honda Clarity. And some of those guys that were getting like 50, I know they were getting some of them 50 miles on electricity, and that would come down with age a little bit too, of course.
Yeah. And you figure Florida highway speeds, 20 is probably more realistic.
Right.
Yeah, but he might not even be going on the highway if he's only driving 20 miles on average per day, maybe you know, it sounds to me like it's not a lot of driving. I would imagine, as Dominic said, or as you said, you know, the daily driving is going to be covered by the battery. So, you know, I actually did the math quickly too when I read this first, and Brendan's 100% nailed it. This is the perfect use case for a plug-in hybrid. And you know, the you look at their 200-300 mile round trips per month without the possibility to charge on the way. That there's almost nothing out there that's going to be able to handle that reliably within your price range. I mean, you could buy a Lucid Air or something like that. You know, you can make those trips, but anything, you know, that's going to be comparably priced or save you money over the Clarity, you're not going to be able to get and reliably do 300 miles without charging. Very few EVs can do that. Very few. So, especially you got to figure, you know, in the summer months, you're going to have the air conditioning cranking the whole day just to make it bearable in the vehicle. So, you know, Florida man, you're going to be sticking with the Clarity plug-in hybrid if you really want to, you know, do this commute the most economical way. You're going to be staying with your vehicle, I think, really.
Right. Yeah. And I don't think that's a bad place to be either. I kind of tend to agree with you, Tom. You know, the Honda Clarity, he seems to like it too. You know, it's a comfortable, you know, cruiser. It's just, you know, those for those big 300 miles days, it'll eat those right up. You know, it's just got lots of space. It's just like a nice car really to drive from the inside, depending on what you think of the styling on the outside. That's like a whole different thing. But some people have some issues with like the wheel spats on the rear wheel, wheels a little bit, little aerodynamic styling. The only other thing I could think of was, you know, if you wanted to, you know, take a gamble, you could buy like a Tesla Model S with like 100,000 miles on it, and that, you know, it'll go over 300 miles.
No, it won't.
But
it won't. Really?
It won't. No 100,000 mile Tesla will do 300 miles. Unless you find a refresh Model S that happens to be in that price range, which it won't be.
Long range 100. 100
those won't be 300 100. Miles on a good, maybe on a good day at 65 miles an hour.
Okay. Because the new ones, they advertise at 3 or 4 something, don't they? The new ones?
Yeah. The refresh Model S, if you can find one cheap, can do 300 miles relatively easily.
You'll never get one cheap though. Like this person's price range.
Yeah,
I mean, those are usually 50, 60K or higher still.
Right. Yeah. None of those have 100,000 miles on them yet.
No.
All right.
Even if they did, they'd still be 50 plus.
Okay, so forget all that. I didn't say any of that. Yes. Yeah, I would say
like an older Model S though is not gonna, you know, do 300 miles. Like, you know, if you had one that was a 2015, say, you know, something like that, you know, with 170,000 miles that he can get for relatively cheap. No way are you going even close to 300 miles on a best day, Dom.
Right. And even the new Model 3 at 70 miles an hour, at 70 miles an hour on the 18 inch wheels, I see someone got a 327 mile result, but that's kind of cutting it close on a new car.
Yeah.
That's way too close for comfort for doing that and not wanting to charge.
You don't want twice a month to be white knuckled, you know, hoping that you're going to make it home.
And also $600 a month, you know, if you put new car insurance on that, it's going to be over $600 a month. Yeah.
Now his vehicle now is, as Brendan said, it's like the perfect use case for a plug-in hybrid. Very rarely do I come to the conclusion of your best choice here is a plug-in hybrid. I mean, there's some, don't get me wrong, there's definitely people out there that is the best. This is the perfect use case, you know, 20, 30 miles a day, twice a month, 300 miles each time with no hope to charge on the way, you know, keeping on a budget that's, you know, a mortal's budget. The Clarity is actually a great vehicle for that.
Right on.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to upgrade, they could look at the new Prius or Prius Prime, but even that's going to blow that budget out of the water.
Right. Yeah, I just drove a Prius last week, and as I mentioned on our Friday show, and I put a little review actually up on Threads. I don't recommend it actually, personally, my own feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I think on a use case like this, comfort and potentially driver assistance are kind of the main features that you want, not sexiness. Because when the plug-in hybrid is not a sexy vehicle,
right?
But it, it should be pretty comfortable, reliable, and cost basically nothing to operate. So I don't have a recommendation for an upgrade.
And they have a, they get great mileage too on the, just running on gasoline on the whatever system. They're up in the high 40s, low 50s, depending on the, on the speeds, which is great for a car that size.
I mean, quite honestly, if he did even get a BEV, talking about the cost of ownership, I don't think it'll even be less. You know, the Clarity is extremely economical. It gets great gas mileage. Gas isn't too crazily expensive right now. So the combination of being able to plug in at home on 110 and then, you know, on these long trips, he's probably getting 45 miles per gallon. Mm-hmm. You know, even if, let's say there was a DC fast charger on this, on his route, so he could stop there, the cost he'd be paying at the DC fast charger would be much more than what it cost him to drive the Clarity. So, you know, he's not saving money getting a BEV, in my opinion.
The real cost savings in a BEV come from, if you're comparing a comparable vehicle, which to like a Model 3, for example, would be a BMW 3 Series, a Mercedes C-Class, something along those lines, that you're looking at more premium vehicles versus, I mean, a Prius, a Clarity, things along those lines. Those cars are unbelievably cheap to operate, especially if you are able to get one used.
Right. Well, all right. So I think we've solved that for now. So let's move on to our next email, and that comes to us from Miguel. And he says, "Howdy guys from Dallas, Texas. I currently own a 2023 Tesla Model 3 Performance that I got back in July of last year, literally like a month before they announced the refresh. I've been tinkering with the idea of upgrading to the refreshed Model 3 Performance once it comes out, as long as it still qualifies for the federal tax credit. That would for sure make sense to me since I barely have 6,000 miles on my current car at the time of writing this email. My long-term plan was to keep my current car and one day get a Model S Plaid, at least if it still makes sense, because the refreshed Model 3 Performance seems like a more compelling option. Any recommendations on what I should do? Miguel." So, Brandon, I think you have some feelings about this. Some thoughts for sure.
I mean, yes, you could upgrade. It would be an upgrade. You're probably going to lose your shirt on that model, that 2023. I'd say if money isn't an object, then upgrade, sure. I mean, I don't think you'll not like it and not think that it's an upgrade. It is a better car, but is it worth the realistically probably $10,000+ that it will cost to upgrade? I don't think so. And especially if the long-term goal is a Plaid, then you may as well just let the Model 3 keep depreciating. And it's probably at a point that it's somewhat plateauing. The bottom of the Model 3 market has somewhat stacked that they can only go so low if you have a newer Model 3 Performance that it's probably not going to drop a whole lot in the near term.
Right. Let's see. Have you driven the new Highland, the refreshed Model 3? I believe you have, right?
I've driven the Model 3 Refresh, but I have not driven the Model 3 Refresh Performance, which is a bit of a different beast.
Right.
The new Model 3 is really nice. Again, I haven't driven the Performance, and it has different suspension, different seats. So it's not directly comparable, but it is a very nice car.
Right. At least you get the sound, the noise reduction thing, at least, and also the steering geometry.
So here's the other option. If he's intending to get a Model S Plaid, used Model S Plaids have gotten really cheap on the used market. You can get a used Plaid in the 60s, 70s if you're okay with a little bit higher mileage. And if you're going to have some cash outlay, which you would to get a Model 3 Performance refresh, you may as well get to your end goal.
But is that the end goal that he should be getting? You know, maybe he's just, you know, thinking of the Model S Plaid as like, you know, just the thing to have because it's like the quickest, right? But do you think it may not be the most enjoyable car for him, though?
It depends on the use case. If you're looking for something to take to the track or drive on canyon roads on the weekend, I would take the Model 3 Performance. If you're looking for something that's stupid fast in a straight line, you want a really comfortable highway cruiser with a ton of range, then the Plaid is going to be a better option.
Right. So Tom, you have some thoughts?
Yeah, I would tell him to stick to his original plan. You know, unless you really have a lot of money to throw around, that's probably not the case because you're saving up to get a Model S Plaid. It sounds like, so I don't think, you know, you're in a position to just throw money away. I know the new Model 3 Refresh Performance is the latest shiny, you know, toy out there that you got it. You're going to die if you don't have it because it's the greatest Model 3 that was ever made. But you know what? Have a little patience here. Stick to your original plan. Keep your Model 3 performance for another year. As Brandon said, you probably took a hit. The biggest hit on the depreciation probably already happened. So ride it out for another year. Save a little bit more. Let those Model S plaids depreciate for another year. And by next year, this time, you'll probably be able to jump into the Model S plaid, which is a better all-around vehicle than a Model 3 Performance. I mean, there's some things in the Model 3 Performance that might be better than the Model S plaid, but overall, it's a better vehicle. I would say stick to your original plan. Hold on to the 3, keep it in good shape, keep the mileage down. Hope you get a good, you know, hope when you're selling it next year, it's at a, you know, we have peaks and valleys with the used car prices with EVs. Hopefully, you know, you're at a peak and not a valley, and you can get a decent amount for it. And like I said, the Model S's that are out there will all have another year of depreciation under their belt, and you can probably make the jump right to there. Because if you trade in or sell your Model 3 Performance now and get the new Model 3 Performance, you know, you're probably kicking the can down the road a few years before you'd have enough money saved up for the S plaid. Because as Brandon said, that swap is going to cost you, I think, at least $10,000. You're going to lose in selling or trading in your current Model 3 Performance and getting the new one. So, you know, you're just taking $10,000 and throwing it away, as far as I'm concerned. It's a better car, but if you really want that Model S plaid, just hold on to your current car and you'll get that. You'll get to your goal a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I took a look at, so the new Model 3 Performance is $46,005 after the federal tax credit. So it's still eligible for that. And used Model 3 Performances with low miles, like 2023, last year's Tesla Model 3 Performance with low miles, are on cars.com for like around $40,000, a little bit below, a little bit above. So he might be able to sell it for around 40 if he wanted to sell right now. So he'd be maybe $7,000 or $8,000 in my calculations, maybe a little bit more than that, say 10,000 to be very conservative about it. Because there's also, you know, transportation costs and all those little things as well.
But Dom, let me interrupt for 1 second. I don't think the Model 3, the current used Model 3 Performances have had the price adjustment shock from having the new Performance available yet. Like, that's going to drive down the price. If you can get a new one for 46 after the tax credit, the people aren't going to go out there and spend 41, 42 on a used low mileage one. So I think that's going to have downward pressure on the current inventory of Model 3 Performance once the market realizes this, because this is brand new, the Model 3 Performance. I don't think, you know, we've had time. So anyway, sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to mention that.
But it's still like a good, probably a good $10,000 chunk that it'll be out on. So I was just going to suggest, like, go to a Tesla store and maybe test drive the new Highland. I don't know if they have a performance on site that you can test at all, but just to see if you like how much you value, you know, the reduced cabin noise, the ventilated seats, the revised front steering geometry. I guess if he had the performance, he could, you know, feel the adaptive suspension, and but also the removal of, you know, the turn signal stocks and all that. I don't know, for Tom and Brandon, it's looking like it's not worth the $10,000. You know, if money was no object, really, I think definitely yes, because it's so much, the new Model 3 is so much nicer to drive in, you know, just with the ventilated seats and just a quieter cabin and everything. It's just such a nicer experience.
Dom, if he's happy long-term with the Model 3, then maybe that is the better deal. I just went on the premise that his ultimate goal was to get into a plaid. And if that still is your ultimate goal, stick to the plan. Because this new Model 3 is just going to delay your plan. You're going to have a little bit more fun for another year or two. But, you know, ultimately, it sounds like you want to be in a plaid, which I think is a good move. Just save your pennies, hold on to the car, and then get into the vehicle you really want in another year. But I'm going to go against Dom's recommendations. Don't go drive a new Model 3 Performance, because if you do, you're going to end up buying it. You know that. You're going to be like, this thing's awesome. Like, all right, I'll get this. So, you know, if you do go drive one, understand that you probably have made your decision already. If you decide to go test drive one, you probably decided you're going to get one. So just keep that in mind.
So just another point, if the end goal is not a Plaid, then it might be the time right now to sell your Performance if you can sell it without having to have the new one right away, and try and catch the market before it drops. Mm-hmm. So if you can get a good value for your existing Performance and sell it for 40, I was going with the premonition that it'd probably sell for closer to 35.
Okay.
But if you can sell it for 40 or more, it might be the time to do it if your end goal is not a Plaid and your end goal is to have the new 3.
Right. And only one minor little thing to add on that. If he does happen to get a newer car, he also gets a new car warranty. So he's got another year of, you know, no warranty worries, which some people that's important. I don't know.
I mean, 6,000 miles and 1 year old or less than a year old. I don't think that's a huge factor.
Yeah. Right. All right, so let's move on. So our final case comes to us care of Francie from the Out of Spec podcast. So no email here. We were just talking, and she has a friend who's looking for a vehicle, and so she gave me some information. And so her friend Cisco, who she says is an amazing sommelier and one of the kindest humans ever, is looking for an EV or an electrified option for his family. Has a wife and 2 kids. The budget is $55,000. He needs to carry 2 kids, a dog, and luggage. So we'll assume he takes road trips, since they mentioned the need for luggage space. And that's about all I have to go on really here. I believe they live in probably the Tennessee area somewhere, and probably in a more urban or suburban location, I'm guessing. Because, you know, fancy restaurants probably near a city, right? So, Brandon, what do you think about family vehicles?
Looking up the price of a car, so I'm going to let Tom go first.
Okay.
Tom. So the first thing that came to mind, but probably isn't what they're interested in, was my F-150 Lightning can hold like 12 bottles of wine in the driver's compartment. The cup holders are big enough for wine bottles. Now, I mean, I'm guessing it can, because not like I would have ever done this, but the cup holders are big enough to hold wine bottles. So I've had them stacked up in there, and then the door pockets are deep, so you could throw a couple bottles of wine in there. The center console is huge. You put a couple bottles of wine in there. So, I mean, let alone the frunk, you could probably put like 8 cases of wine in the frunk. So, you know, if you're a sommelier and, you know, you're always carrying around samples, that might not be a bad choice. And it's kind of within your price range. And it's big enough to do everything you need it to do. The back seat is huge for 2 kids and a dog, no problem. And luggage up in the frunk or, you know, wherever. So, but I know you're probably not looking for a pickup truck. I'm leaning towards talking about Kia EV9s. You need something that's big with, I don't know, how big is your dog? Is it a little poodle? Is it a big shepherd? You know, if it's a tiny little dog, then, you know, some of the mid-size crossovers like Kia EV9 and the Hyundai Ioniq 5, even Ford Mustang Mach-E might work for you. But I'm going on the premise you got a big dog and you need something bigger. So EV9-ish, you're kind of right on the threshold. If you lease it, you get the tax credit. So that's kind of what I'm saying. But don't rule out the Lightning. If you really don't hate pickup trucks, go check it out. There's great deals at Ford dealerships right now. I'm looking at them and salivating. I'm like, I could, like, you know, trade in my Lightning. Of course, I'll take a bath, but I get like a brand new one now for like of my model for like 15 grand less than what I paid. So it's like, there's some super deals on Lightning. Ford wants to move them. They're kind of sitting at dealerships for a little bit longer than what they had hoped. There's some great deals. I mean, I saw an XLT with extended range battery for like 51,000. That's nuts.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, so like I almost bought it just to have it in my driver. So, Meredith would kill me if I came home with another Lightning, but I'm like, this thing's, what a deal. So, I mean, take a look and see what's out there. Some of the dealers are throwing some cash on the hood to move these. And, you know, if you're not completely against a pickup truck, it seems like it would work for your use case. But I think I'm leaning more towards EV9, and I'll let Brandon expand on that topic a little.
Yeah, I think EV9 would be a good choice if it meets the needs. Again, it depends on the size of the dog, how old the kids are, how long you plan on keeping it. I mean, if you plan on keeping it until the kids are teenagers, an EV9 might not be big enough. But I'm going to throw out a little bit of a wild card choice here with the deviation from just an EV to being open to just electrified. So you can get a 2022 Volvo XC90 plug-in hybrid with under 50,000 miles on it within that price range, actually in the 40s or low 50s. So that's kind of a wild card choice, super comfortable, very luxurious, a lot bigger. Personally, I don't think a Lightning's a great choice. Having unenclosed storage is just not that useful in my opinion, especially if you're trying to transport luggage and things like that, because it's just not 100% watertight.
Brandon, frunk.
Look at the frunk.
Yeah, but
frunk. It's huge.
But then you have the whole bed just sticking out, but not being used. I don't know. I think it's silly. If they had an F-150 or if they had a Suburban or Expedition Lightning all day long, I could recommend that. But I think that's a missing piece in the market.
And they should have an Expedition or whatever size SUV on that platform, yeah. I think. I mean,
they were going to, but that just got kicked down the road for a couple of years. Yeah. That was coming in 2025. Now it's 2027, I think.
Yeah,
but look at Rivian. I mean, the R1T, they're somewhat struggling to move, and the R1S, they're just moving all day long. That just seems like a very obvious choice for Ford.
Yeah.
Right. You would think. But I mean, before,
they're going plug-in hybrids, guys, for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I like the F-150 Lightning suggestion, just because I'm thinking like, so in the back seat, you said it has a huge back seat, but it also has lots of floor space too, right? So if it has
like two dog,
kids, a dog could be on the floor,
a right? big dog could sit there
and have a lot of lots of room. Yeah.
So but I drive my parents around all the time. They can't reach the seats, the front seats when they're sitting in the back. It's like, you know, it's the back of the front seats are like 4.5-5 feet away from them. It's a huge area in the back.
That would not be the case if I was sitting in the front seat.
I know you're big, but it's huge, Brandon. I mean, sure, you've been in the back of a Lightning. It is. I mean, it's an F-150. It's not like the Lightning isn't special in that regard. It's an F-150 cab, but it's just enormous. I mean, I've had I've driven all the pickup trucks and everything. The Lightning's it's just. The back seat is amazing. It's enormous. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Another choice. I think if the dog is smaller, if it's like a smaller, like lap dog sized dog, even a Model Y realistically would easily meet these needs because there's a ton of trunk space. You can fit two kids pretty comfortably in the back seat if the dog can be between them or on the floor, kind of between them. As long as it's not a big dog, Model Y would work great for this use case too.
Right.
Tesla doesn't make the third row Model Y anymore, does it?
No, they do.
Do they? I don't remember. I didn't stay until because maybe you could put you could put the dog back there is what I'm talking about. Not for kids. You know, maybe the dog could sit back there. I mean, I know it's a joke, but like.
Your luggage space is pretty much gone at that point, though.
Yeah, you're right.
You probably want to keep that. So I was thinking, I don't know. Do you have any more there, Brandon, or was that it?
No, I think that's it. I mean. It's very dependent on the dog size, whether you can go smaller, kind of mid-sized crossover, or if you have to go to a bigger SUV. Right. Bigger SUV, go with the EV9. If you need something, or if something smaller will work, look at the Model Y or the wild card choice, like I mentioned, an XC90 on the used market.
So you mentioned EV9. So I took a quick look over here on cars.com. And so, it's well within your budget for short range, at least. Mm-hmm. That's a smaller battery. Forget what the range is, probably a little over around 220, something like that. Did anyone know off the top of their heads?
I think somewhere around there. I'd probably plan on like 180 at highway speeds. I don't recall if Kyle or anyone's done a range test on it, but that would be my guess at highway speeds. It's a bigger vehicle.
Right.
I would probably go long range if you can find one at a reasonable price.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. Or so you could buy it like that, or you could possibly lease one. So here's Here's a little chart of some leasing things from TrueCar. 490 a month. Built in price. So if you lease the vehicle, you get the federal tax credit. You know, you can take advantage of that. So that brings that leasing number down. But there's still, you know, it's not like a huge burger, but like the Hyundai Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 6 right now are have like great lease deals on those. So if the Hyundai Ioniq 5, actually, it was my first kind of thought because the lease deal is so good. But then I thought, well, with a dog, maybe it's not enough, not big enough. So the Kia EV9 was like the next logical step up. Yeah. Right. So
I would just be, I think in the short term, though, supercharger access could maybe be a consideration. And at that point, a Ford product, so the Lightning or Mach-E might be a better option, at least in the short term. We'll see what that looks like going forward. But even once they have supercharger access, the EV9 and all the 800-volt vehicles just don't charge that well on superchargers.
Right. But the Mach-E is an interesting suggestion, too, if it's like big enough for the dog or whatever as well, because the 2024 has got that new rear motor, so they got more range and more performance. It's just like a nicer car. They've really kind of stepped it up, and the price has come down as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't love the Mach-E personally. I mean, I don't have anything against it, but I don't think it's the most compelling option at the price point. And the interior is uninspiring to me. But they do have really good range depending on the trim, and I would generally recommend a Model Y over a Mach-E.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I know people go back and forth.
It's just a lot better.
Yeah, people go back and forth with some. Yeah, because different things about the Model Y ride. I guess the newer ones ride better than the earlier ones for sure. But yeah. But the Mach-E also gets some criticism for its suspension as well. But a different kind of criticism. It's not like super hard like the older Model Ys, right?
I mean, the Model Y is just a really easy car to recommend overall.
Right.
It is, but there is a segment of the population that don't want to buy a Tesla, and not necessarily exclusively because they don't like Elon, or they just because they want to. Some people actually want to buy cars from dealers, and because they feel like they've dealt with this dealer for a long time. It's right down the block. If there's a problem, I can get service. Who's this Tesla people? Where are they from? You know, there's no service by me. You know, they say someone will drive to my house. I don't trust that brand. So, you know, it's always easy for us who are like insiders in the industry to recommend Teslas, but I know a lot of people that just won't buy them. And a part of the reason is, you know, there's a certain comfort level with a dealership and knowing you can drive there and say, this thing isn't working, fix it. But with Tesla, it's like, you got to get on your phone and your app and schedule service. And like, you know, I mean, even I have an issue with it sometimes. Like I have something, a minor thing wrong with my Rivian, and Rivian service is great. Don't get me wrong. But like, it was a little frustrating that I couldn't immediately talk to somebody about it. That it took me, I had to schedule the service, and then somebody called me and they walked me through steps to like do myself. And, you know, at some people just want to take it to the dealership, throw the keys on the service desk and say, you fix it. Don't make me reboot this and do this and do this. So I understand why some people aren't ready for that type of an experience. I mean, I love the direct sales and not having to go to a dealership in most instances, but we can't totally discount that. The fact that we can't only recommend Teslas, because there's some people that just don't want them.
Yeah. The word of caution I would use there, based on what I've heard from some people, is that not every dealer will actually service EVs. So whether they have EV certified techs and things like that. I've heard of a case in rural Colorado that it was a struggle to find a dealership that would actually service a Lightning.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
No, that doesn't surprise me, but I'm talking about people will, if they bought the car at the dealership, they'll service it. I mean, they have to, there's a lot of people that have relationships with their local dealer, you know, and they bought 10 cars from them, and they know John, the service manager, and you know, that to them, there's value in that. And I understand that.
Yeah. And there are deals to be had, especially right now on some leftover 2023 models and things like that.
Yeah, it's true. Right. All right. But I think that'll have to wait for the next episode. So that brings us to the end of this show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. Don't forget, if you didn't like the show, please give us a thumbs up. Click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon. Ciao.